Now we will begin part A with the first conversation. Number one.
Do you mind if I borrow your vacuum to clean out my car?
No problem.
What does the man mean? Number two.
Shall we set the tent up?
Yes, right away. Then we better start a fire. It's cold out here.
Where does this conversation most probably take place? Number three.
This apartment isn't in very good shape.
It's the worst one I've seen.
What does the woman mean? Number four.
Do you know where I can have my clothes cleaned?
Why not wash them yourself? There's a laundromat on 3rd Street.
What does the woman mean? Number five.
Are you going to take 6 classes again this fall?
Not on your life.
What does the man mean? Number six.
Karen says her shoulder doesn't hurt today.
She'd better have it looked at by a doctor anyway.
What does the man think Karen should do? Number seven.
Both of our rear tires have gone flat.
What?
What does the woman mean? Number eight.
How did Carol's cake turn out?
I don't know. Why don't we try some and see?
What does the man say about the cake? Number nine.
How about some ice cream?
No, thanks. I'm watching my weight.
What does the man mean? Number 10.
Dr. Olson, do you think I could take my exam a few days ahead of schedule?
I'm sorry. That's out of the question.
What does Dr. Olson mean? Number 11.
Did you like the joke Professor Stapp told before class this morning?
I'd heard it 100 times already.
What does the woman mean by her response? Number 12.
You sing beautifully.
Well, I guess I can carry a tune all right, but I could certainly never be an opera star.
What does the man say about his musical talent? Number 13.
There should be 2 dozen sandwiches in the picnic basket.
Is that counting the ones I brought too?
What is the man asking? Number 14.
This heat is really getting to me.
Me too. What would you say to a swim?
What does the woman mean? Number 15.
Professor Larson doesn't accept late papers.
Neither does Professor Andrews.
What does the woman mean? Number 16.
I can't figure out how to organize my history term paper. Can you help me?
Me? I've never written a term paper before.
What does the woman imply? Number 17.
Can you tell me where the library is?
It's marked on the map in the back of your school catalog.
What does the woman imply the man should do? Number 18.
I'd like to buy Greg a new brown sports coat for his birthday.
Do you really think you should get a brown one?
What does the man imply? Number 19.
I can't believe how nice your report looks. How did you finish it so fast?
I had my secretary type it for me.
What does the woman mean? Number 20.
Today's meeting has been rescheduled for next week.
Great. I'll have time to run some errands.
What does the man mean? Number 21.
Weren't you supposed to go swimming yesterday?
Even if I'd have had time, I would have preferred to do something else.
What does the man imply about himself? Number 22.
Pat needs to get to the airport by 3 o'clock. Can you give her a lift?
No problem. I haven't got anything else planned for tomorrow afternoon.
What does the man agree to do for Pat? Number 23.
Congratulations. You got the highest score in the class on the calculus exam.
What a relief. I spent most of last week cramming for it.
What did the man do last week? Number 24.
Could I ask you to do me a favor?
That depends on what it is.
What does the man mean? Number 25.
Were you able to get a refund for that book?
I didn't have my receipt with me.
What does the woman imply? Number 26.
You must have watched half a dozen videos already this weekend, and it's only Saturday afternoon.
Well, actually, I only rented 3, but that's probably plenty for this weekend.
What does the man imply? Number 27.
Richard should have arrived in Minneapolis by now.
If the weather didn't interfere, he might be delayed.
What does the man imply? Number 28.
I got a parking ticket today.
Not another one.
What does the man imply? Number 29.
Have you called the landscaping service yet about mowing our lawn?
I got Sam to take care of it. He likes working in the yard.
What does the woman mean? Number 30.
Guess what? We want you to be our featured speaker at graduation.
Oh, no, I couldn't.
What can be inferred about the man? This is the end of Part A. Go on to Part B. Part B. Directions. In this part of the test, you will hear longer conversations. After each conversation, you will hear several questions. The conversations and questions will not be repeated. After you hear a question, read the four possible answers in your test book and choose the best answer. Then, on your answer sheet, find the number of the question and fill in the space that corresponds to the letter of the answer you have chosen. Remember, you are not allowed to take notes or write in your test book. Go on to Part B. Now we will begin Part B with the first conversation. Questions 31 through 34. Listen to a conversation about moving.
Do you have much left to do before you go?
Not too much. Right now I'm cleaning one last time, trying to get everything in shape.
You know, I've been meaning to tell you that I'd be glad to help you with that in any way I can.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Actually, I'm almost finished. But if you have a minute right now, I'd like to ask you to help me move the bed so I can clean under it.
Sure. You certainly are doing a thorough job.
I don't think anyone should have to move into someone else's mess.
I agree. Do you need a hand with anything else?
Well, not for now, I don't think. But would you mind giving me a ride to the airport tomorrow morning?
No problem.
Number 31. Where does this conversation take place? Number 32. What does the man offer to do? Number 33. From the conversation, what can be inferred about the woman? Number 34. How will the woman get to the airport? Questions 35 through 38. Listen to a conversation between two friends.
I thought you were going to start recycling, but I see you've put all your bottles and cans in the trash again. Did you change your mind?
Well, I started saving all the cans and bottles I use, but I found it so time-consuming. I mean, clear glass and brown glass and green glass all have to be separated for recycling. Then, as if that's not bad enough, some kinds of plastic containers can be recycled while others can't. So they have to be very carefully sorted, too, and, well, it just didn't seem worth it.
But it really is worth it. Using the same materials over and over again can help save the environment. It can also save you money.
Okay, I know you're right. I'll start recycling again today. Now let's take that walk you promised me.
Number 35. What had the man thought at first? Number 36. From the conversation, what can we assume that recycling means? Number 37. Why doesn't the woman think recycling is a good idea? Number 38. What does the woman promise to do? This is the end of Part B. Go on to Part C. Part C. Directions. In this part of the test, you will hear several short talks. After each talk, you will hear some questions. The talks and the questions will not be repeated. After you hear a question, read the four possible answers in your test book and choose the best answer. Then, on your answer sheet, find the number of the question and fill in the space that corresponds to the letter of the answer you have chosen. Here is an example. On the recording, you hear, "Listen to an instructor talk to his class about bumblebees."
The familiar black and yellow bumblebee is often found in fields of red clover. It is the only bee with a tongue long enough to fertilize this plant, so it is impossible to raise red clover where there are no bumblebees. Like the queen wasp, the queen bee is the only member of her colony that lives through the winter. She starts a new colony in her underground nest every spring, by laying from 400 to 1,000 eggs in wax cells or combs. Bumblebees also produce honey. Their nests are often dug up and the contents eaten by bears, mice, and other animals.
Now listen to a sample question. Why is it impossible to raise red clover where there are no bumblebees? In your test book you read, A. Only bumblebees can fertilize red clover plants. B. Bumblebees protect red clover from plant-eating insects. C. Bumblebees bring water to red clover plants on their tongues. D. Bumblebees keep mice and other animals away from red clover plants. The best answer to the question, why is it impossible to raise red clover where there are no bumblebees, is A. Only bumblebees can fertilize red clover plants. Therefore, the correct choice is A. Now listen to another sample question. According to the speaker, in what way are the queen wasp and the queen bee similar? In your test book, you read, A. They both make honey. B. They both build combs. C. Both of them are found in underground nests. D. They both live through the winter. The best answer to the question, according to the speaker, in what way are the queen wasp and the queen bee similar, is D. They both live through the winter. Therefore, the correct choice is D. Remember, you are not allowed to take notes or write in your test book. Go on to Part C. Now we will begin Part C with the first talk. Questions 39 through 42. Listen to a talk given during a campus tour.
Hi, My name's Tammy Mullen, and I'll be your guide on our campus tour. As we walk through the campus, I'll provide a bit of history about the college, and I'll describe some of our fine academic programs. Right now, we're standing in the lobby of the Boyd Memorial Library. This library is named after Alexander Boyd, its first director and greatest benefactor. Thanks to Dr. Boyd's fine efforts, library development got off to a very good start here, and the Boyd Library now houses over 800,000 volumes, including periodicals and newspapers. We also have more than 60,000 maps and 2,000 photographs in our collection. All of the library's collections are arranged for easy student access. There are comfortable study and reading lounges. In addition, more than 500 individual student study desks are located in the library within easy reach of reference materials and library stacks. Are there any questions about the library? Good. Then let's move on to the Klein Biology Building. If we're lucky, the greenhouse will be open and we can take a peek inside.
Number 39. Where does this talk take place? Number 40. Who is the speaker probably talking to? Number 41. Who was Alexander Boyd? Number 42. Where will the speaker probably go next?
This is the end of Side A. Please turn over the cassette to continue.
Questions 43 through 46. Listen to a lecturer in a hotel management school talk about hotel theft.
Hotel guests don't just take the shampoo and soap that we leave for them. They also help themselves to pillows, blankets, lamps, towels, ashtrays, even bathroom fixtures. People who lead otherwise honest lives take just about anything they can get their hands on in a hotel, even things that are bolted down. American hotels and motels lose more than $85 million worth of goods each year. Although this is a disgraceful statistic, there is not much that we, as hotel and motel managers, can do about it. Catching thieves may actually be bad for business. We would have to either install hidden cameras in rooms and hallways, or search guests and their luggage before they leave the hotel. Either option would be very unpleasant for the guests as well as for us. We might also mistakenly accuse some guests who haven't taken anything. Even if we did catch some people stealing hotel property, it would not be worth it. Fortunately, our business still takes in a lot more money from our guests than they take from us. The cost of thievery is just another hidden expense which we have to absorb. And there may be a good side to all of this. Remember, we put our company name on almost everything in the hotel room. The honeymoon couple, looking for a memento of their stay with us, might take a towel embroidered with our name and remember us for many years to come. It's bad behavior on the part of our guests, but good advertising for us.
Number 43. What is the main purpose of this talk? Number 44. Why is catching hotel thieves, according to this speaker, potentially bad for business? Number 45. Why do hotels and motels often put their name on articles in the rooms? Number 46. According to the speaker, why are honeymoon couples often hotel thieves? Questions 47 through 50. Listen to a lecture about flying squirrels given by a naturalist at a natural science museum.
Flying squirrels do not really fly. Birds and bats can fly. Flying squirrels are masters of gliding. Since they have no true wings, they cannot add power or maintain level flight. The flying squirrel likes to begin its glide in the top of a tree. It springs into the air and stretches all four legs out at right angles from its body. A flap of skin called a podagium extends from the squirrel's wrist to its ankle on each side. This skin acts as a sail and allows the squirrel to glide in the air. The downward glide is usually at an angle of 40 to 50 degrees and may take the squirrel over 150 feet. Special muscles control the tension of the podagium on each side so that the flying squirrel can adjust the angle or speed and direction of the glide. The squirrel's flat tail does most of the steering. Slight twists allow the squirrel to avoid hitting twigs and tree trunks in its path. Flying squirrels prefer to end their glide on the trunk of a tree. This feat is accomplished by bringing the tail up sharply, a maneuver which brings the body to a vertical position for landing and slows momentum. In thick woods, flying squirrels usually jump from branch to branch. If the trees are farther apart, the squirrels glide from the top of one to the trunk of another, which they must climb to continue their journey. Before taking questions, let's go out back to meet Sam, our own resident flying squirrel. Maybe he'll cooperate and show us how he glides.
Number 47. What is the speaker's main point? Number 48. According to the speaker, what is a function of the flying squirrel's tail? Number 49. Why do flying squirrels usually jump from tree to tree in thick woods? Number 50. Who is Sam?